Welcome to American Dissident Voices. I'm Kevin Alfred Strom. In 1920, a few prescient white Americans and Europeans were awake to what was happening to our race. A racial war had begun against us, though very few were aware of it. We now face the year 2020, 100 years later. That war on us and the resistance against it have continued for a century. Where do we stand? What should we do? In 1920, the white man, to all appearances, was at the peak of his power, the highest ever point of his advancing knowledge of the real world, the zenith of his best mind's realism in abandoning the superstitions of the past, and standing upon the threshold of controlling his own future evolution through the new science of eugenics. And the white man ruled the world. The sun still never set on the British Empire in 1920. America and her Monroe Doctrine dominated two continents and beyond. European possessions spanned the globe, and white elites dominated many countries of mixed provenance. But there were cracks in the edifice. Jews had used popular Enlightenment ideas to establish themselves as legal equals in every white country they had colonized. Coupled with their long-established financial power and added to their heavy purchases in the growing mass media industry, including films, books, and newspapers, and soon to include electronic media, too, this allowed them to become the most powerful faction in white nation after white nation. And they would use their power everywhere to weaken and dilute the white majority, which they saw and still see as a competitor and a threat. In the United States, the massive immigration of Jews that began four decades earlier was still going on in 1920. They had already established their dominion over New York City, national publishing, and national politics. A Jewish defector, Benjamin H. Friedman, stated that a group of behind-the-scenes Jewish manipulators, to which he himself belonged, controlled President Woodrow Wilson like a poodle on a string. Friedman said that, quote, "President Woodrow Wilson was just as incompetent when it came to determining what was going on as a newborn baby," close quote. By manipulating Wilson, Jews had, by 1920, gained the ability to control America's money through central banking, and had plunged America into World War I for Zionist objectives. They were in the full flush of their power by 1913, in fact, when they launched a massive national PR campaign, bigger than anything ever seen before, led by the Jewish-owned New York Times and Jewish advertising executive Albert Lasker. The purpose of the campaign was to exonerate Leo Frank, the Jewish sex killer of a 13-year-old white girl. Frank just happened to also be the Atlanta, Georgia president of the B'nai B'rith. This campaign is still going on today. By 1920, Jewish communists, helped by Jewish Wall Street, had taken over a major European country. Russia. The Russian Revolution was anything but Russian. Within 2 decades, tens of millions of white Europeans would be killed by communism. By the 1950s, the toll would exceed 50 million dead white people at the hands of Jewish Bolshevism, and tens of millions more would languish in the hellish Soviet gulags for thinking wrongly. For some reason or other, there is no Holocaust Memorial Museum for these millions of murdered white men, women, and children. No national holidays, no docudramas, no required teaching in schools, no distinguished fellows or chairs in studies of the genocidal massacres of white people by Jews. By 1970, 50 years later, Jews had so consolidated their power over the United States that a leading theologian, Billy Graham, and the then President of the United States, Richard Nixon, in a private conversation that by a happy combination of circumstances happened to be recorded, would both acknowledge the toxic nature of Jewish influence, but be powerless to act against it, and fear to even say anything about it publicly. My friend, Dr. Revelo P. Oliver of the University of Illinois, surveyed the situation just before the halfway point of this century of war and resistance, and he concluded in 1969 that all conservative approaches had failed and were doomed to fail. When the culture distorter has captured the culture, when those who want you dead control all major political parties, all major media outlets, and almost all academic positions, you have nothing left to conserve. What is left? Dr. Oliver asked, and then answered, only the biological fact of race, the yet discernible vestiges of our culture, and the yet fresh memories of what we were not long ago. Those are all that we have left from which to create, if we can, a new nation to replace what we lost. This is correct thinking, and advanced thinking even in 2019. It is astonishingly advanced thinking for 1969 when Dr. Oliver spoke those words. You gain nothing by pretending that those social institutions are still yours when they are not. You gain nothing by pretending that the police and military forces arrayed against you are yours. You gain nothing, and in fact cause irreparable harm, by serving the geopolitical interests of those who have captured your government. You must become revolutionaries. You must bypass or shatter existing institutions and make them anew. The time servers and sellouts and conscious enemies who constitute the old elite must be swept from our presence forever. We must constitute a new elite. A daunting goal, perhaps, but the only goal that makes sense. Dr. Oliver made his assessment as part of a promotional film, After 50 Years, for the National Youth Alliance, the predecessor of today's National Alliance. the book the Youth Alliance chose to inspire young people? Was Francis Parker Yockey's Flawed but Powerful Imperium, which is today still available from our Cosmotheist bookstore. As we approach 2020, much has changed. Today, unlike in 1920 or 1970, it is no longer possible to convince 99% of white Americans that this is still their country. The Jews who control the mass media, enraged by the small resurgence of white populists and traditionalists that got Trump elected, and doubly enraged by the appearance of more and more racial nationalists on social media, and overplaying their hand as usual, have gotten their daggers out, and their anti-white agenda is becoming obvious to everyone. The passing of the great race, the replacement of whites, is now openly celebrated by Jewish culture distorters and their functionaries, even as the third worlders they have empowered, like the Squad, are starting to smart in and complain about the Jewish yoke. Today, unlike in 1920 and in 1970, the Jewish power structure and its employees have begun the process of openly demonizing and dehumanizing the adherents of the only philosophy that can free us, white nationalism. They deplatform and dox and scheme to deny us not only our voices, but interfere with our families, deny us the ability to engage in commerce, and soon even deny us the simple necessities of life. And all of this is visible, open now. They move inexorably to exercising the power of life and death over us that they exercised in the Soviet Union. The purposeful starvation, the bullet in the back of the head, the knock at midnight, the fake trials, the execution chambers and gulags of the NKVD. What do you think Antifa is, after all? Just a plausibly deniable army of thugs and killers, as is obvious to everyone, or a first step to one that need not be denied? Many, many whites, even whites who are afraid to commit at this time, are intelligent enough to see these developments and understand them. Today, unlike in 1970, and for the very first time, the World War II generation that was so emotionally invested in fighting Hitler is no longer a major social force. New generations of young whites are arising for whom Hitler and National Socialism are not evil, are not demons, but are instead great symbols and avatars of opposition to the degeneracy and evil and anti-white genocide they see all around them. Today, we have much more than Imperium. We have the great example of what Yockey in that book called the hero of the Second World War, Adolf Hitler, and his titanic, even mythic struggle, not yet finished, despite his martyrdom against the enemies of life. We have that great example shining in front of us, and shining before the new generations of our folk more than ever now, as the tired myths promoted by our enemies deservedly and inevitably expire. We have the life's work of Revelo Oliver, the greatest of which he created after 1970, after the age of 62, when he renounced conservatism and Christianity, fully endorsed racial nationalism, and promoted the National Alliance and National Socialism. we have one of the greatest books of the 20th century, Which Way, Western Man, by thinker and philosopher and National Alliance member William Gailey Simpson. We have the life's work of the founder of the National Alliance, Dr. William Luther Pierce, whose leadership had just barely begun in 1970. Dr. Pierce relentlessly wrote and organized and broadcast his works to the world until his death in 2002. And Will Williams, the current chairman of the Alliance, has dedicated his life to not only preserving these works, but to vividly and repeatedly promoting them and making them available again and again, week after week, year after year, to new generations of our people. Today, unlike in 1920 and in 1970, we have the ability to propagate our message to millions of our people via nationalvanguard.org and our other outlets. It's been a long time since our pages were visited fewer than a million times per month. We and other racial nationalists, many of them awakened and inspired by our work, have been so successful in doing this that the Jewish power structure is desperate to shut down our media operations by any means, fair or foul. This, of course, is proof that they know our truthful message resonates with the healthy segment of our people. If you add to our readership the dozens of other sites in tune with us with a like or larger audience, and the hundreds upon hundreds of others with a smaller but still significant audience, the white nationalist audience is surely in the multiple millions now. No wonder Trump's handlers pandered to us to help him get elected. The hundreds of thousands of young white people who read our words are making themselves known. They have been censored, delisted, banned, and shadow banned again and again and again. Yet, on Twitter alone, they still number in six figures by my estimate and are growing by the day. Young people who know that Pierce and Rockwell and Simpson and Oliver and Hitler will be the saints of the future and its architects. As one wag put it, the only question is, how tall will their statues be? It is true that the hundreds of thousands who read our words have mostly been free riders. Most have not joined us or sent donations. Some are doubtlessly intimidated by what the Jews have done to ruin the lives of conscious whites. To those of you who are in that category, let me say two things. One, there is great safety in numbers. When 250,000 people are supporting the National Alliance instead of just reading our words, we will be strong enough to be a social force that few will want to tangle with, legally or otherwise. Then the fence sitters will leave the fence in droves, and a 250,000 will be just the beginning. They won't have enough corrupt U.S. attorneys or jails to make much of a dent in our numbers or our morale then. In fact, by then, we might have more than a few prosecutors on our side, as well as leaders in every field of our society. When these people see that someone's finally doing something. Two, it is using cryptocurrency, which is not hard to use, quite possible to support our efforts with perfect anonymity. Even we won't be able to know who you are unless you want us to. Another reason for the free riders is, I think, a psychological peculiarity of white people. Despite our great propensity for free thought and individual innovation, we are a deeply law-abiding people who respect authority and hierarchy. We need psychological permission from a leader before engaging in warlike acts, or in going against convention, or in going against powerful interest groups. But once that psychological permission is obtained, no one is a stronger or better fighter and conqueror and destroyer of his enemies than the awakened white man. We need to position ourselves as worthy, and actually be worthy, of leadership. We need to be excellent in everything we do. We need flawless logic and sterling character. We need authenticity and honor. We need the authority that comes from knowledge and truthfulness. We need the moral authority that comes from wisdom and from right living that will be an example to all who see it. We need to be unforgiving and totally dedicated to stamping out each and every threat to our people's existence forever. We need relentless effort that never tires, never quits. We need to engage the authorities of our society and publicly challenge their corruption. Most of all, we need to be strong, for no one and nothing in nature respects the weak. As William Pierce said, the National Alliance needs to embody a society in the making, embody with excellence every function needed to assume societal leadership when the time is ripe. Have we done that yet? No. Are we ready to take on such in-depth leadership of our society now? No. No one is. But when the hundreds of thousands see that we are serious about doing exactly that, our cause, in the words of Dr. Oliver, will move forward with the gathering momentum of an avalanche.